Radio is here in Tashkent, Uzbekistan for a special triple header this Saturday night live on DAZN around the globe featuring unified world super bantamweight champion MJ Murajan Akhmadaliyev, super lightweight sensation, the Wonder Boy, Shahram Giyasov, and of course the dream, Israel Madrimov, who looks to make a further dent on the 154-pound division. So today, I'm joined by the man that is tasked to lead all three, trainer Joel Diaz. Joel, how are you, man? Nice to see you.
I am great. I'm actually excited to be here, be part of this historical event. If I'm not mistaken, this is the first big event in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, and I'm part of it. You know, it's one of the things that I will always remember. You know, historical moments, bringing these Uzbek fighters to their hometown, and Murajan defending his title for the first time. So I'm excited to be here. I'm happy, and everything's great. You know, honored to be here, part of you guys' show, and looking forward to it.
I want to say that we're also honored to be here as part of Matchroom, and we're doing the global expansion, and we're really happy to be here in Uzbekistan. It's a big honor for us also, and we're very happy that the country of Uzbekistan can be part of that. And you really are a major part of this, obviously. You're the one that's tasked to lead all three of the three kings, the Uzbek kings, to victory. Is this your first time in Uzbekistan?
Yes, it's my first time, and I know it's not going to be my last. You know, by the way I see the fan base here in Uzbekistan and how big of icons these fighters are here, I think Uzbekistan is going to be our second home for Team Diaz and everybody around us. All these guys are great fighters, and you know, it's not only Akhmadaliyev, Giyasov, or Madrimov. On the undercard, we have Jalalov, Sanjar, Dosmatov. Those are also part of my team, you know, but they were not in camp in California with me. They were training here, but they're also part of my camp. So more likely, I'm going to be part of their fights here also. You know, I'm going to help as well, either do some hand wrapping or something, but they're also part of my team. Just the fact that they were not there for training with me for this camp. But I'm still here to guide them in whatever they need while I'm here.
Well, I'm curious, how did this Uzbek connection take place? How did you hook up with all these Uzbek fighters?
It's a great story, and I just think that things happen for a reason. I'm pretty sure you guys remember, or who will ever forget the fight, Tim Bradley and Ruslan Provodnikov. That fight, I think that was the key to connect us, because after that fight, I've known Ruslan Provodnikov before that, since he fought Mauricio Herrera. At one point, Provodnikov was offered for one of my brothers when my brother Julio was still active fighting. So after that night, you know, met with Vadim, who is the manager of all these Uzbek fighters, and I told him, man, you know, I'm a big fan. I've always been a big fan of Ruslan Provodnikov. Since that moment on, since that fight, that night, every time we ran into each other in various events, I would always ask, how's Ruslan? How's Ruslan Provodnikov? The champ is great. You know, every time I would see him, take a picture with him, because I became a big fan of Ruslan Provodnikov. So it happened when I was in Arizona with a family for it was like a little mini vacation on the weekend. As I was driving back home, I got a call from Vadim, an unexpected call. And I still remember driving back the desert, and I'm sort of losing signal, and he tells me, "Well, how are you? This is Vadim." I say, "Hey, Vadim, how are you, man? Hey, nice talking to you. What a pleasant surprise." And he says, "Yes, you know, I'm calling you because I want to ask you something." I said, "What's going on?" There's talks about Provodnikov fighting Manny Pacquiao, and among all the trainers that I know, I think you are among the best, and we chose you. Would you be interested in training Provodnikov for the Pacquiao fight? You know, they both train at the wild card with Frey Roach, and you know, if the fight happens, they can train in the same gym. I said, yes, buddy, I'll do it. No problem. Great. He says, are you willing to come to LA? And I said, no. Would you be willing to come and train him in Big Bear? I said, no. I said, I'm sorry, but I have my camp in Indio, and I've never left. I have a team of fighters that I train, so, I mean, it's not fair for them as well. And he says, okay, I'm going to call you back. I'm going to talk to Ruslan, see if he's willing to come to Indio. He doesn't know where Indio is, never been away from L.A. Okay, so he called me back. He called me back and says, okay, we're going to bring him. We just got to figure out because he has a masseuse and a strength and conditioning coach. I said, we have all that over here too. No, but he trusts his guys. And then at one point he says, Joel, let me ask you something. Would you come to L.A. and we get a house for all your boxers for you to come with your whole team and train everybody here so everybody's okay? And I said, Vadim, no. Because these guys are going to say, we're not here because of us. We're here because somebody else. And that's not fair. You know, all my fighters have established there for years. And, you know, I don't think they're going to like it. You know, moving them from Indio, where they've been based for a while, and I'm moving my whole camp just because of Ruslan. Think about it. Next day he called me and says, okay, we're moving to Indio. First day, Ruslan Provodnikov comes to Indio. He was like in a little, like, his guard was up. He didn't know what was going on. The second day, he was happy. Third day, he says, I love Indio. It was hot at the time. It was one of those years where in summertime, it went up to like 124 degrees. And he loved it. And he says, here in Indio, from where I live to the gym is only 5 minutes. And it's 5 miles. In LA, it's 5 miles and it takes me an hour. So he loved Indio. And that's how the relation started with Vadim and I. Vadim, and then we had a couple fights with Ruslan. We went to Monaco together. We went to New York. So after Ruslan's career ended, the relationship between Vadim and I, still, you know, we were still strong friends. And that's when one day he calls me and says, hey, we started a new team. We got some Uzbek fighters, fighters from Dagestan, Kazakhstan, Russia, and we would like for you to see them. I was actually in LA for the Matisse fight. And I happened to go to LA, and the first fighter I saw was Gyasov and Akhmedov. I went over there and checked them out, and I said, man, these guys have a lot of potential. We're going to bring them to Indio. So they came to Indio. The first time they arrived in Indio, they were staying at a motel. They set the fighters at the motel that was walking distance from the gym, and they would walk to the gym and back, and they loved it. They loved it, and they're like, and I could tell that they love the environment, the training, and they're like, we've trained in New York, we've trained in Miami before, and we don't like it. We like it here in Indio. So then they started renting places in country clubs. They rented a place in a country club where they had the boys, and then all of a sudden, after Diyasov and Akhmedov, and then they brought Akhmadaliyev, and then they brought another kid from Dagestan, which is Raja Butayev. And then from there, it went on and on and on and on to from renting an apartment to renting houses. And you're talking about renting houses, they were paying like $5,000 a month until they said, man, these guys love it here. And now they bought a home. They fixed it up, converted it into like six, seven bedrooms. And now they're establishing Indio. Indio is their home. And that's how the relation started, and that's how everything started. Now, everybody's there. Thank God they loved the town. It's very peaceful. I mean, unfortunately, 4 months of the year is hot, but other than that, it's a great place for training, where you're away from big distractions. You know, it's not a big city; it's a small city, but it's in the desert, and it's great for athletes that really want to do it. You know, you have to isolate yourself. Stay away from distractions, and that's a great place. So that's how everything started, the relationship started, and that's how I met every single one of these boys. One brought another, and then now we've got a great team, of Uzbek fighters.
Well, I would almost say it's like a family, and that's how they look. I mean, I know the guys, and the way they talk about you, they really look at it like a family, and they highly respect you, obviously. But it's a great, I love kind of the full circle, like you talk about the Bradley Provodnikov fight, which was just an incredible fight, obviously, and then about how you hooked up with Ruslan and Vadim after that. But I almost believe that that fight would not have been what it had been if it hadn't been for the Bradley Pacquiao fight before it. Because, you know, the public consensus was that Bradley lost the fight. He obviously won the fight on the scorecards. But it was almost like it seemed, tell me if I'm right, it seemed like it was almost like a loss to him, even though he won. It seemed like the public was so against Tim Bradley, which wasn't fair. He didn't make the scorecards. You know, Tim Bradley's a warrior. He fought the fight. So when he went into the Provodnikov fight, I mean, he just went with reckless abandon. And, I mean, it created a masterpiece for the fans. Am I correct in that?
You're correct in every way, because... And I will never forget this for the rest of my life. When Bradley fought Pacquiao, everything was like, okay, at the end of the fight, Bradley was on his feet. He didn't get knocked out by Manny Pacquiao, who was knocking everybody out at the moment. So we celebrated, and after the celebration, we get the decision. But that celebration only lasted like a few minutes until Bob Arum got the mic and basically threw us under the bus. Like, what happened here? What kind of bullshit decision was this? And, you know, so from there on, like, okay, I mean, Bradley's also your fighter, you know? So from that moment on, carrying Bradley from the ring to the press conference in a wheelchair because he had broken an ankle. He fought with a broken ankle from the fourth round, I believe. And as of that moment, there was no excitement. Everything felt like, honestly, everything felt like a funeral, like if we're in a funeral, because, I mean, we went there to fight. Yeah. We went there to fight. We did our job. We did our job, and at the end of the night, it's like we end up with a winning decision, but we never expected for everything to turn against us that night. And going into the press conference, and everything was so negative, and I'm not going to lie to you, when everybody went back to the rooms, all you see is sadness in everybody's face. Everybody was sad. Top Rank had provided Bradley a bus to be transported from Palm Springs to Indio. The next morning when everybody woke up on the way home, we all met at the bus. It was the saddest trip of our lives because everybody was quiet. Nobody was talking. Bradley was crying. Like, what happened here? What happened? And the saddest part was getting home, and Bradley didn't want to come out. He didn't want to talk to people. I changed my routine, my daily routine, from waking up in the morning and going to a coffee shop. I would get up and go to my ranch. I didn't want to talk to people. We start getting calls. We start getting threats. We're getting letters in the mail, or threats from people, like, you know, some bad ones. You know, Tim Bradley had to move from the house. We lived in the same neighborhood. He moved from that house to another house because he was getting threats on the mail, you know, calls. And it was bad because I would go and see Bradley and I would tell him, hey, tell me, coach, the sport I did for so many years, I just don't like it anymore. I said, man, come on, cheer up. He'll be at home. He didn't want to come out. So then I remember Bradley was in a wheelchair for a while. I remember that fight was like in June. And then July, August, started getting better from his foot, started getting on crutches. So Tim Bradley gained a lot of weight. And Bradley was a person that never was still. He was always working, even though he wasn't fighting. Due to the fact that he had a broken ankle and he was in a wheelchair, he was on crutches, he gained weight.
Do you think the depression played a part in that?
A big part. Depression and, you know, inactivity. So coming into the gym again, it was closer to December, and I would never forget. And I even told his wife at the time, was manager. Says, okay, Tim's gonna get back in the ring. We already talked to Top Rank, and he's fighting in February. And I said, okay, great. He had just got out of his crutches. He was going to start training close to December. I think it was November, December. And then she says, okay, well, they sent us a list of fighters so we can decide. At that time, it was Brandon Rios, Alvarado. It was
those two had a couple great fights, by the way.
Also. Yes, of course. I mean, those were the fights that they were offering. Like, they said, okay, they gave us names. What do you think? So they gave me. We have Alvarado. We have Brandon Rios. We have, I remember, there was another two fighters. And then it was Ruslan Provodnikov. And I told Monica, I remember I said, Monica, okay, we'll take Alvarado. We'll take Brandon Rios. We'll take this. And I left at the very end. I said, this is the last guy I want to fight right now. The very last guy I want to fight is Ruslan Provodnikov, because I already knew who he was. Okay, so I gave her the list. She took it, and then I go home, and I analyze the situation. And based on the outcome of the fight, I'm packing on stuff and Top Rank. And the next morning, come to the gym, and I said, Monica, I think I messed up. She says, why? Remember the list I gave you yesterday? And I put Ruslan Provodnikov at the end. I said, they're going to give us Ruslan Provodnikov. She goes, why? I know they are. Because the one that we don't want is the one they're going to give us. Sure thing. They call us and say, oh, well, this guy's not available. This guy's already committed. So-and-so. So the only fighter available is Ruslan Provodnikov. I said, I told you. So then Bradley goes, okay, coach, let's do it. So we did it. So the thing is this, going into the fight, close to February, a week before the fight, Tim calls me, and I go to his house, and he tells me, coach, he says, this is the first time ever I'm having trouble with weight, ever. He's never had problems with weight. And the week of the fight, he was too heavy. He goes, I don't think I'm going to make the weight, coach. What do you think I should do? I go, what do you think? I brought a guy to help us lose weight. And, okay, coming into Carson, the day of the weigh-ins, in his whole career, he's never had problems with weight. He never had to lose weight the day of the weigh-ins. We had a room that had a tub. It's a square tub, pretty deep. I remember he did a hot water with Epsom salt. And he lost 4.5 pounds that morning of the weigh-ins. Coming to the weigh-ins, he told me, coach, I feel like a little dizzy, you know? Really? Yeah, I feel like, ooh, a little woozy. All right. I said, we'll try to rehydrate and get back into it. Well, the day of the fight, walking to the ring, after we warmed up in the dressing room, I told him, hey, Tim, listen to me. This fight is easy for you. Hit and move. Just hit him and move. Ruslan Provodnikov is a fighter that wants you to stand in front of you to exchange. If you stand in front of him, dangerous. He goes, and he looks at me, he goes, he just smiled. And I didn't like the smile. I did not like the smile at all.
You knew.
I knew. And the reason why he did it was to prove a point from the previous fight. And he gave himself in, and I'm going to tell you one thing. I think he lost 10 years of his life in that fight.
I agree with you. I don't know if Timothy Bradley was ever the same, and I think he'll probably tell you the same thing. And for the fans that haven't seen that, you need to watch that fight. It's a classic, hell of a war. But it's a great story that you tell. And I love how you talk about the role that a trainer plays, not just in the technicality, the boxing and stuff, but as almost a psychologist or a father figure, you know, talking Timothy Bradley out of that funk. And you know, he was saying, I don't love the sport anymore, and keeping him back in. Tell us what that role is like, and do you play that with other fighters also?
That's the problem with me. I get so attached to my fighters that I'm a father figure, not only a trainer. I'm a father figure to every one of my fighters. Yasov, Ahmad Aliyev, Madrimov, everybody. They know. They've been in situations where I step in to talk to them and mentor them. Coming into the Bradley fight, and I'm going to tell you, after the fight with Bradley and Ruslan Provodnikov, the next day I go to his room, because that night he was so hurt. He got concussed pretty bad. And I go knock on his door, And when I knock on his door, he's like, he can't even see. His eyes are shut. His face is sideways. And I say, how you feeling, champ? He goes, coach, I'm good. He couldn't even smile. And I said, man, why'd you do what you did? Man, I told you. He goes, coach, you know me. I got balls. I go, it's not about having balls. It's about being smart. He goes, coach, I'm good. Turn on the TV, and there's a fight. It was a time where they were showing the fights the next morning on TV, the replay. And we start watching the fight. And when he goes down, he goes, oh, oh. He goes, no, I'm telling you. He tells me, coach, that happened? I say, yeah. He goes, wow, seriously, coach? Whoa. And he's like, he's watching a fight. Exactly.
He can't even believe that it's happening.
He can't believe what he's watching. So then from there on, we go home. We go home. And I'm telling you, for about a month, I would go to his house and he would be just sitting, slurring. He couldn't speak. He was like really slow. And then I said, wow, you know, hopefully you get better, man. And it went on like that until they said, you're fighting again. And his next fight was Juan Manuel Marquez after he knocked out Manny Pacquiao. And I said, wow. So we started training. And when we started training, I had my brother Julio getting ready for Amir Khan.
Sure.
Same time, same training camp. And as we started training, Tim Bradley, his first sparring session was against Lucas Matisse. And his equilibrium was off because he was concussed. And I give him three rounds with Matisse, and I said, no, he's going to get hurt. I got him out. So we started his camp, and I brought a kid that was 126 pounds and a kid by the name of Vicente Escobedo, 130-pounder. And they were helping him because he was fighting Juan Manuel Marquez, and they had similar styles. One day he was sparring Vicente Escobedo, 130-pound Olympian, U.S. Olympian, and he gets caught with a left hook and goes down. Bradley's never been down in sparring. And he says, Vicente goes, oh, champ, I'm sorry, you tripped. He goes, no, you got me. Take it. So we went into camp. We went into camp for so long to the point where we were getting close to fight date. And we lived around the corner. And one day I told him, champ, what time are you going to go run? At 9, coach, because you will run at night. I said, I'm running with you. I went out, I met with him, and we started running together. And before we started running, I said, Tim, I'm thinking about pulling the plug on this fight. And he looks at me, he goes, coach, please. I said, Tim, you haven't been looking good not even one day in the whole camp. You're fighting Juan Manuel Marquez. He just knocked out Manny Pacquiao. He says, please, coach, let's do this. I said, no. I said, Tim, no. And he looks at me, and he sort of like, he gets teary-eyed. He goes, please, coach, there's a lot of money in this. Let's do it for your family and mine. I said, no, it's not about the money. I said, let me tell you something. It's not about the money. You know what it is? I said, the last thing I want to do is take you to a fight where you end up in the hospital. I want to bring you back to your family. I said, there is a thin line between making the right and the wrong decision at the right time. He goes, please, coach, if you see that I'm getting hurt, just stop the fight. No, that's not the point. In that fight, when things are happening, I could make the wrong decision at the wrong time. And I don't want that. And he's like, coach, please give me some time. So then he brought some doctors from New York, concussion specialist. Please, coach, give me 2 weeks. I'll give you 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, they were with him day and night. Until last week, it was almost close to camp. My brother Julio was about to fight. It was a week apart. And I told my brother Julio, come in and help me spot Bradley and tell me how you feel. Okay. He goes, I'll take care of him because everybody else is trying to prove a point. Julio sparred him 10 rounds. Julio goes, hey, if he fights the way he sparred today against Marquez, he'll beat Marquez. Really. And that's a story that we'll always carry because those concussions were bad. Actually, years later, Vadim calls me from Russia and says, you think Bradley would take a rematch with Ruslan Provodnikov? Bradley's wife has said, we'll never fight the guy again. Only if they give us $10 million. You know, when you overprice yourself, that means you don't want the fight. And sure thing, I said, hey, they're offering $6 million. They were offering $6 million to fight Ruslan in Russia. And Monica says, no, if they give us $10 million, we will. Because she knew they weren't going to do it. But that's what happened. And no, but that was the story with Bradley, man.
Just incredible. And your brother went on to fight Amir Khan. There was another, you know, there was another fight that reminds me of that in a way, not in how serious it was, but it was a great fight when Amir Khan fought Peterson, because he could have outboxed him, but he chose to sit and slug with him. And I love that fight. That's another great fight, fans out there, if you haven't seen it, really, really exciting fight. Let's talk about these three Uzbek kings, because that's really, I guess, what we're here in Uzbekistan for. It, like you said, it is a homecoming. We've got 6-0, 5 knockouts, Israel Madrimov. He's the dream. He's campaigning at 154. He's got a fight against Emeny Colombo. This guy from South Africa, 14-0 with 14 knockouts. What can you tell us about this fight?
I think this fight is going to take the night, because Colombo is very confident. He's solid. He's solid. He's a big boy, and he has power. Madrimov carries dynamite in both hands. He's so elusive. He's hard to find, and every punch he throws comes with bad intentions, and styles me fights, and I think this is going to be one of the greatest fights of the night. I see a lot of action in this fight, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, I know it's a very dangerous fight for both fighters. You know, I just think it's an evenly matched fight, and this is what makes boxing, you know, great, exciting fights like this. 14-0, 14 knockouts against a kid with only 6 fights, you know. I mean, it's a great fight, but the talent that Madrimov carries is that he's very smart, very elusive, and he can hit you with both hands and hurt you with both hands.
100%, and he's so athletic. He's just so fun to watch. The next fight I guess I want to talk about is Shahram Giyasov's fight. So Shahram, Olympic silver medalist, he's 10-0 with 8 knockouts. He's campaigning at 140. And he's fighting Patricio Lopez Moreno on Saturday. He's fighting out of La Paz in Baja California. And, you know, it's funny. Patricio is also a really tough fighter. There's something I want to add. I want you to answer what you think about that fight. But I want to talk about – there's another question, a follow-up question, because you're from Michoacán. You're from Mexico, originally born there. And, you know, obviously Mexico is an incredible hotbed of boxing. But so now is Uzbekistan. So different culturally. So, like, you know, it's great to have, you know, I've been to Mexico many times, announced fights there, and we all love the Mexican style of fighter. And in fact, Patricio calls himself, he says he fights with that style. What do you think it is about these two countries that is breeding these great fighters?
These two countries have that blood in them, you know, that warrior mentality. They have that warrior mentality where, you know, they're dominant, and they're natural born warriors. I think these Mexican fighters are hungry to be successful, as well as the Uzbekistan fighters. I see similar traditions. Believe me, now that I'm here and just being here for a few days, I know why these Uzbekistan fighters bring the fire, as well as the Mexicans. In Mexico, I think poverty, the bad economy, is the reason why these fighters want to succeed in life. And I see the same thing in the Uzbeks.
I agree with you, but it's more than poverty. It's a lot of poor places out there, but there's more of like a mentality, right? It's a tough place, Mexico. It's hot. There's a lot of violence. The food is spicy. It's a tough place.
You are right. But at the same time, remember, they have that warrior mentality. In Mexico, if you were born in Mexico and you were raised in Mexico, you know how it is. You grew up in a different environment as a kid, you know, where you have to survive. You know, you have to fight for what you got. And I see the same thing here. It's about growing up with that mentality that, hey, you're going to fight for everything that comes across. And they have the fighter's mentality. That's why this fight is going to play out really well. Shahram and Moreno are going to put up a great fight. I think Moreno brings that Mexican style, and it plays out for Shahram. Shahram's a smart fighter who expects for Moreno to come looking for him, because that's what we want. We want him to come look. Sometimes you have more difficulties fighting a fighter that you have to chase around the ring than a fighter that comes 100%. Looking for you.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Yeah, sometimes when the guy's really elusive, you got to go looking for him, it can be very difficult. So finally, the main event, MJ. He's the champ, 8-0 with 6 knockouts, super bantamweight champion. This is his first defense of the IBF and WBA titles against the tough Japanese fighter Iwasa. And we've seen inactivity take a few scalps in this pandemic. You know, there's been some inactivity. Does this concern you at all? I mean, MJ's last fight, obviously, was when he won the titles in Miami against Danny Roman. That was January 2020. I remember well. It was great. It was great announcing that, you know. I did MJ's first fight in New York, in Brooklyn, and also Chakram's first fight. I think it was 2018 at the King's Theater. It was great. Super exciting. And now, you know, I got to announce him winning the unified title. So this is his first defense. Are you worried about the inactivity at all?
Inactivity is always a concern for every fighter, but I think in this situation, we all went through the same thing. You know, I think the inactivity has been similar for Iwasa as is for MJ. And, you know, they're going to have to figure it out in there. The thing is that with Akhmadaliyev, we keep him active. We keep him active all the time, you know, plenty of sparring, plenty of training. We monitor his work, his rest, and everything. So he's great. I mean, there's times in which closer to the fight, he's having a little bit of trouble with his weight. But now everything was perfect. He's been on weight since we got here. So he's motivated. And what excites me the most is that this is the first time I've seen Akhmadaliyev dancing, you know, singing, happy every day. Obviously, he's fighting at home. Homecoming for him, fighting in front of his home crowd, it's a big motivation.
And, you know, spending time here, he is such a beloved figure here. He really is. And if you know him, he's a wonderful guy, and you could see why he's so beloved. And he fights like an absolute warrior. So really looking forward to the main event, obviously, and MJ's first defense. You were talking a lot about Indio, and for the fans out there that don't know, like you said, it's a couple hours from LA. It's in the desert. You know, it's out by Joshua Tree, which is, by the way, it's what a magical, magical place if you've never been out there. Coachella, you know, is out there, Palm Springs. But you were at the Indio Boys and Girls Club for what, like 18 years? And now you guys have opened up your own gym. Tell us about the new facilities.
Well, we're not quite open yet. When the pandemic started, you know, I've trained kids at the Boys and Girls Club for 15 years. Antonio's been there for 18 years. And we had a great program there, you know, training pros and training amateurs. We were blessed with training fighters, professionals, and working with kids. I actually ran the program, the Boys and Girls Club program, in Mecca. Mecca is another town which is like 13 miles from Indio, south. And when this pandemic started, obviously it enabled us to work. And they had to shut down. They shut down gyms and stuff. So I have a program of professional fighters. So I had to, meanwhile, you know, get a place temporarily. But at the same time, years ago, I bought a building, which was a furniture store. Huge furniture store. It's almost 7,000 square feet. And during the pandemic, I was a little bit stressed. You know, a little mad, frustrated. So one day I wake up in the morning and I go to the building and I started cleaning it myself. I got a couple of the boxers. They had nothing to do. They were there stuck for the pandemic. They couldn't go home. So we cleaned it all out. I got a contractor and we started the project from ground zero. And right now we're close to opening up and it's going to be one of the best and biggest boxing gyms in California.
Can't wait to see what comes out of there. And speaking of, you know, obviously we've got the three guys. We've got Madrimov, we've got Giyasov, we've got Akhmadaliyev. But like you said, you got another really big stable. You were just training Yildirim for Canelo. And I'm going to ask you two questions, because for the fans that are listening right now, we're in Uzbekistan, so we're not in our usual studio. We're just handing the mic back and forth. That's why there's not a lot of back and forth banter. So I'll ask a question. Hoel answers it. But I want to ask you if you think BJ can cause problems for Canelo, number one. Because you did all that work with Avni, so you know, I know you were studying Canelo very well. And the other thing too is you're talking about other guys in your stable, and I want to talk about the bull for a second. I want to talk about Beck, Bully, and what you think of him. I mean, I know you think very highly of him, but I want to know in your words what you think of him. 7-0, 6 knockouts. He was set to fight Kovalev, and obviously the fight got canceled. What do you think of that stuff?
If you talk about Beck the Bully, I can tell you this. that guy right there is something that I've never seen in the time I've been as a trainer and as a boxer myself. I've never seen such a phenomenal fighter like Beck, Beck the Bully. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because we have so much trouble finding sparring for him. And at the beginning, every sparring partner that we hired from the Southern California, Northern California area, Arizona, San Diego, everywhere, they come and they only come once. They don't come again. And for every fight, we start searching for sparring and we call. And believe me, it's getting expensive every time, because before it's like, okay, we need some sparring. Okay, and we're paying $1,000 for 3 days, maybe 4 rounds one day, 5 rounds another day, and 6 rounds another day. You're talking about 14, 15 rounds, $1,000. It's a lot of money. And all of a sudden, they're like, oh, for who? For Beck. And they're like, oh, no, we can't, because, you know, that's the situation with Beck the Bully. Beck is a devastating puncher. I mean, if there's power on fighters' punches, I don't know what to call on Beck. Beck has devastating power, timing. Beck is the next superstar of the sport in that division, 168-pound division. And, I mean, looking forward to big fights against the best fighters in 168 pounds. And believe me, I think, and I know for a fact, that Beck the Bully is going to be one of the most avoided 168-pound fighters.
Beck Tamir Melikuziev. What about BJ Saunders and Canelo real quick? I'm curious on your take if you think BJ can cause Canelo any problems.
Saunders is a great boxer, smart mover. But I think Canelo already found something, found a key. That's why he took the fight. I think it's going to be a great fight. I think Canelo's only going to have problems within 3 to 5 rounds, just until Canelo starts attacking the body and starts hurting him to the body, because eventually Saunders needs to fight. He needs to fight to win. So he needs to exchange with Canelo. And in those exchanges, I think Canelo's going to take the best of him.
I do want to discuss your own boxing career. How do you reflect on your career? I mean, obviously, you fought for the world title against Philip Holliday in South Africa in 1996. But when it was cut short due to the eye injury, that must have been really difficult for you. How did you deal with that?
My career ended up as 28-3 as a pro career. It shows 17-3. But I fought most of the fights for a spot at 29 Casino, which was an Indian reservation. And due to those fights that were not counted on my record for California State Athletic Commission, we had problems. I mean, it was a long story based on my eye, because I couldn't get my pension when I couldn't fight after that. But to me, honestly, it was one of the most devastating moments of my life, coming back from Africa and having problems with my eye. And I fought for a title eliminator, for the WBC title eliminator, to fight Stevie Johnson. And I won the fight by knockout in the 9th round. And I'm like, okay, now I'm fighting Stevie Johnson for the WBC. But having problems with my eye, I went to the doctor. And when the doctor says, so I think you can't fight anymore because your eye is pretty damaged. Your retina is detached from like in a clock, like from 1 o'clock to like 7 o'clock. And you have a pretty damaged detachment. And I said, I can't believe you. I can't believe what you're saying. He said, yes, you can't. Your career is over. And I'm like, I don't believe you. And I'm like a little aggravated. So took a second opinion from another doctor. The doctor says the same thing. From that moment on, my life made a big turn, honestly. And it was one of the darkest moments of my life, because growing up as a kid, you know, I've always lived in a rough environment. So when my career was over, my life changed, because I started boxing to help my family. My parents always working in the fields, picking vegetables, and, you know, just basically living day by day. When I would come home, 5 brothers, 2 sisters, living in a 3-bedroom house, sometimes in a 2-bedroom house, everybody on the floor. And I wanted to box because that's the only thing I knew how to do. I never played any other sports in my life but boxing. And when that happened, it's like, I remember as a boxer, I was 18 years old when I bought my mom her house, because I wanted to take care of my mom and my dad. And I never forget the point where every time I fought, I did my prayers and said, God, give me the strength, and you know, whatever it is, I want to buy my mom this. And I bought my mom a living room set. I bought my mom a dining table. I mean, you know, not high-end furniture, but took care of my mom, bought her a house, bought her a car, a used car, my dad a truck. And when that happened to me, honestly, I can tell you from the bottom of my heart, I like, why me? The only thing I did was help my family, you know? So it was like, I relied a lot in bad influences, and I cried to myself at night, like, why me? I never wanted jewelry. I never wanted cars. I wanted to help my family. Why did God do this to me, you know? At that point, I had some bad friends, you know? I started working for a cartel as a bodyguard. My life was surrounded about guns and violence and stuff. So I started working for a big man on the cartel and working as a bodyguard, and started traveling and living the life, you know? Started doing what I had to do to bring the money home. I didn't care, honestly. It went from a point where I didn't care about killing, and I didn't care about dying. My life was like, hey, my life is done. I mean, my boxing career is over. I'm done. I don't believe in God anymore. And I'm like, okay, so I started doing that. I started living a life where everything was surrounded by guns, drugs, and power. I did that for a long time.
And how did you get out of that?
How did I get out of that? Good question. My mom, one day coming home, me just doing some crazy stuff and news and stuff like that, coming home in the middle of the night, sometimes not coming home. My mom crying and telling me, please, I don't sleep at night. Thinking that one day you might not come back. You're going to be in jail. You're going to be dead. He says, your brothers are fighting. Why don't you help them? You know a lot. Help them.
Beautiful.
Looking at my mom crying, I said, okay. It's changing my life. I started going to the gym. Started training Antonio, and started like, but the thing is that these people that I'm working for, they love me, and they supported me. And all of a sudden, hey, you know what, my brother's fighting. Okay, no problem, hey, here. It got to the point where everywhere I went, I was always taken care of. One time in Chicago when my brother Julio fought Juan Diaz, I'm there, and I get a call from the front desk, and I go, and hey, you hear anything you need, you go here. And like, but everything started because I'm in the sport. I did everything right. I was always loyal to my people. I always did the right job. Whenever they needed me, I jumped. Whenever they called me, I was always there. And little by little, it's like, hey, my brother's fighting here, my brother's fighting there, and I'm training this guy. Thank you. Up to this day, I got the, hey, how you doing, man? Hey, good job, man. We see you everywhere. You're over. But there was like, there was no bad terms. It was like, man, you're doing great things, and that's what my life evolved around, all this stuff, you know?
I really appreciate you sharing that with us, and I know that must have been a really tough time.
And it was all until my brothers started, you know, doing their careers. Antonio fought for a world title, defended it 12 times, and then Julio started fighting, and all these people started seeing me like, you know, I know that guy, and they invite me to their parties, and still, you know, now I'm the guest. I'm not the employee. I'm not the guy, you know, watching his back, you know, moving things, you know, clearing the road for him, clearing the whole city for him, you know, making sure that if he's going to drive this street, that whole street right there is protected and he's fine till he gets to the end, you know. Now it's like, hey, come here, meet this guy, meet that guy, you know. Hey, here you go. And look what he's doing. And then Bradley came along. And now I'm here. And that's my way out.
You found your purpose, and you're doing an amazing job. And we love seeing you and your brothers. So let me, Scott, producer, do we have time for the rapid fires real quick? Okay, we got to answer these quick. These are fan questions. This is great stuff, and I mean, I could talk to you all night, but we do have a time thing on here. Okay, Ray Cauldron asks, Joel, you boxed at lightweight. Who do you think is the king of the lightweight division right now?
Right now, Ryan Garcia.
Okay. Terry Johnson asks Joel, how did you link up with Uzbeks? We went through that one. Okay. Thank you for your question, Terry, but we answered that one. Julio Batista asks Joel, what was it like cornering your brothers Antonio and Julio? How did you separate your emotional attachment as a brother to a head coach?
It was hard, but I had to be the strong man in that corner to not show him weakness. You know, as a big brother, I had to play a big brother role in that corner.
Okay, and the final one here is from the drummer 1666, and he asks Joel, who have you got in your stable, and maybe we don't know about an awful great deal about that you can that you think can go all the way? I think that we probably answered that when we talked about Bully Beck the Bully, but I'll let you answer it.
Bektimir Melakusiev, the Bully, is a kid that is going to surprise the world.
Thank you, Joel. It's so great to see you. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me here in Tashkent, Uzbekistan. And we wish you all the best of luck on Saturday night. And we're going to be speaking to Shakhran Giyevsov coming up next, the Wonder Boy. And we'll see you really soon. Thanks a lot, man. God bless.
Thank you. And it's a pleasure being here with you guys, man. And sharing stories is great.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with my second guest of the day, and it's just a real pleasure to be here and to have you on the show. I'm with Shakhram Giyasov, and his nickname is the Wonder Boy, and he's from Bukhara, Uzbekistan, and he is the WBA International Light Welterweight Champion. He's 10-0 with 8 knockouts, and it's just great to see you, and you must be really honored to be fighting in your home country, Uzbekistan, for the first time as a professional.
Yes, it's the first time for my country, Uzbekistan, Tashkent, from Tashkent, my first fight, is a big fight. First of all, I want to say thanks to DAZN, Matchroom, Eddie Hearn, my manager, Vadim Kornilov, World of Boxing, my promotion. This fight from Tashkent, my fight, because this my parents, my friends, my fans, too much. Saturday coming 12,000 people coming say us, you know. He long time. Me also long time waiting. He finally here my fight.
So
I'm very happy. I'm very, very happy.
Well, I'm also very happy, and I see it in your face.
Yes. First of all, I want to say I'm sorry for my English. First time is without my translation. But for you and for Matchroom, from DAZN, I try. First time.
Well, you're doing great, and I really appreciate it. And I'm going to go very slow, but I don't think I need to, because your English is very good. And in fact, you know, I don't know if you remember, but I think you do. When I first meet you in 2018, when I did your first fight.
Yeah, I remember. I remember this fight, my debut. I know these guys, Argentina. Yeah, 10-second knockout. Yeah.
Yes, it was incredible. The crowd goes crazy. And, you know, when I met you and Murajan for the very first time, your English was very small. But now it's very good. Where are you learning the English?
My manager Vadim Alik, my manager with Joel Tony, every day street training, every day speaking with my guys, with my friends, with my coaches, you know. Every time I try, I learn, I reading books, sometimes internet, Instagram. Your Instagram, I see, my brother.
Well, it's speaking of Instagram, well, thank you. Your Instagram also is incredible, and you have so many fans. Boxing so big in Uzbekistan. You are very popular, Murajan very popular, Israel very popular. Why is boxing so popular in Uzbekistan?
Because Uzbekistan people love it boxing so much. Because why? 2016 after Olympic
success,
Olympic success, 3 gold medal, 2 silver, 3 bronze, 2 bronze medal. His country is crazy. Wow, it's first time. It's first of all, this very, very good, you know, too much medalist. After this, interesting too much. After this, Asian champions, you know, 9 gold medals. Asian, 10 weight, 9 Uzbekistan, Asian champions. After this, world champions is Germany, 2017. I am also is gold and very good boxer. Yes.
And also Olympic silver medalist, which is amazing. And you're training alongside of Israel Madrimov and Murajan. What is that like training with these guys?
Together every time we together as here Tashkent. To every time we together training, together eating, together walking, and focus it only fight, focus it only Olympic, only world champions the title, you know, as amateur boxing. But after this career, we together wanted more, no amateur and professional box. And I wanna wear belt. I wanna. I want an absolute champion, you know. I'm trying, I'm going. I think my time come. I try, I do.
Now, obviously we're here in Uzbekistan, but how much time do you get to spend here? I mean, you're training most of the time now, of course, with Joel Diaz in Indio, California. Yes. So are you spending most of the time in America, or do you ever get to come back to Uzbekistan?
No, me more time living to USA, California, because my fight, my dreams, my focused only America, because now we need preparation 2 months before fight, you know. After fight, I going to home maximum 1 month. Again, going to USA, fly to USA is living, dreaming, training, focused only my fight, focused only my opponent, you know. And after fight, I come back.
You are from Bukhara, which is far from here. It's a long way. Will your family come? Will your friends come to see your fight on Saturday?
Yes, and my father, my fans, he's also, of course, going. I give him ticket. He going. He long time waiting my fight from Uzbekistan. When I young, he every time going to my fight. He see watching my fight. But I'm a world champion, Olympic. He cannot fly with me, you know. A professional fight also is a USA. My also fight is no coming. It's now my dream coming as my fight here from Uzbekistan. My parents, my cousins, my everything is coming now, watching my fight and helping.
Do you find it more pressure because you're here in front of the home fans, or you're more excited for this?
Excited, yes. I am focused. I'm fire, you know? I'm fire, yeah. I wanna show big fight. I'm ready for fight.
Yes, I like it. I can't wait. And you always do bring a fight, man. The Wonder Boy. So you're fighting Patricio Lopez Moreno this Saturday. What do you know about this guy? He's a Mexican fighter. What do you know about him?
Yes, I know he record 28 fight, 24 win, 20 knockout, 4 lose. I know. I watching the guy fight. I watching with my manager, with my coaches. We learn. Now I want to show fight. I want to show. Yeah, I know what we need, what we do, you know.
So you now have the WBA international title, but how soon do you think you'll be fighting for a world title? Do you think you're close to this?
Very close. I want big fight. I want a world title.
Speaking of a world title, there's a great fight at your weight class coming up between Josh Taylor and Jose Ramirez. It's a very good fight. How do you see this fight?
Oh, it is very crazy fight. I want to see, I want to watching, because two great boxers, you know, Ramirez and Taylor. I like these guys. I like this style. He working very good. He's smart. He fast. He strong. But I want to see who won. I think I give 60% Taylor, 40% Ramirez.
Man, what a great fight. So close.
Yes, so close fight. Yeah, I know.
And there's another fight, another fighter that I want to talk about really quick. He's your fellow countryman, Shojahan Ergashev. He's also undefeated. 19-0, 17 knockouts. He goes by the name Descendant of Tamerlan. Do you think maybe he's in your same weight class? Do you think that maybe there could be a fight down the line?
I don't know. These guys are good. Yeah, he's a good puncher, good fast, Uzbeki guy. I don't know. If coming for us fight, it's no problem. We warriors. We always ready. I am always ready. If him ready, I am also ready. If giving you a title, who win? I say it's my title.
Yes. Yeah.
So finally, what can we expect to see on Saturday night?
Expensive.
What can we see Saturday night? What will we see from you on Saturday?
I wanna show big show, big punch, too much punch. I want my fans, it's the zone, everything for my fight is relaxing. It's for interesting, you know. I wanna big show. I wanna show. Yeah, big show.
Too much punch.
Yeah, too much punch. It is my style. It's Wonderboy style.
Chakram, too much punch, Wonderboy Giyasov.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Listen, I love seeing you, and I cannot wait to see you fight Saturday. Thank you for taking the time on Fight Week to come and speak to us here at Matchroom Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry for my English, my brother. Sorry, it's Matchroom, but I'm try with us guys.
No, your English was great, and we wish you the best of luck, and we'll see you Saturday, Chakram.
Yes, see you. Inshallah, I watching good show.
All right, and to finish today's episode, we've got an exclusive. The Glasgow Warrior heavyweight Nick Campbell, managed by Mark Dunlap, makes his pro debut on the Ben Vargas undercard next week in London. So episode one here in Uzbekistan, done and dusted. We're going to be back tomorrow right after the weigh-in, and until then, I'm David Diamante, and this has been Matchroom Radio.